Welcome to The New Exchange, a podcast series that explores how everyone has a story to tell. My name is Kent Grandpierre, and I'll be honest with you, I generally don't care about numbers. You see, in the music industry, there's this constant conversation of how many views or how many streams someone's gotten that week, and utilizing those numbers as a metric of a person's worth. And it's important for me to tell you how I can't stand that, because I do genuinely care about the art of today's guest. Lana Lubani is a London-based pop musician with Palestinian roots that play a prominent role in her art. Throughout the year, she's released singles that have not only impressed her fellow Palestinians, but have also become viral worldwide. A big part of that is due to TikTok, a platform where Lana reigns supreme with over 8 million likes and over 300,000 followers. Like I said, I don't care for numbers, but the context of bringing this up is that Lana is an artist who's solely striving to be herself. In both a world and an industry that tries to convince people to be a copy, Lana is an outlier in how she approaches, well, pretty much everything. So I knew I had to talk to her, and I'm so grateful that I did. Lana is a hilarious human being with a good heart and a confidence that's infectious, and most of all, she's a young musician that fully embraces that she indeed is an artist. On this episode, we share a few laughs as Lana schools me on her origin story, Arabic swear words, the importance of family, and what it's really like to go viral. Be sure to follow Lana on all socials after you hear our chat. I have a feeling that she'll be announcing live shows sooner than later, and trust me when I say, you won't want to miss out on that. This is The New Exchange with Lana Lubani. Enjoy. You know, when I found your music, the thing that I really gravitated towards was that heritage and culture plays a big factor in what you do. And personally, I think it's important to highlight because I don't think it's common enough for people to do that early on in their careers, at least not enough. I have to admit, when it comes to Palestinian culture, like many people, I have to admit that I'm fairly ignorant. So if you could school me for a second, I'd really love it. How would you describe growing up in a Palestinian household, at least your household?
Well, the food is great. I'll just say that. It's one of my favorite cuisines in the world, and it's like healthy and stuff. There's a lot of rice, olive oil. It's kind of the Mediterranean diet, but like Palestinian / Lebanese, if you've ever had Lebanese food. So that's like a big, big highlight, the food and the olive oil. It's a big part of my personality. I come from a really like liberal family. So like I had a lot of freedom growing up, and like my parents supported me in doing my craft like ever since I was a little kid, and they still support me, which is amazing. I come from a very like positive household, and like being Palestinian is a very positive thing. I did grow up like, so my grandmother's from New Jersey, and I did grow up holding on to that part of myself a little bit more tightly, just because like of problems going around in the world. And being a Palestinian wasn't always a positive thing where I grew up because of like politics for me as a kid who wanted to fit in. But then I realized that like actually being Palestinian is amazing, and why should I be ashamed of that because of my environment, because of what people thought around me. So I kind of embraced it and like found success in that and happiness and my true identity. So yeah, I don't know if that really answers the question. It kind of like segued.
No, it totally does. I think what was really beautiful about that is that it highlights the nuances and the multitudes of like there's no one way to answer that question. You know, like if you think about the way I asked that at the top with, you know, mentioning that I'm ignorant, you know, towards your culture, I feel like that's significant in what you just described, where if you just think about how you were made to feel, like your culture was less than at a certain point. I feel like the turning point might have been, and you know, definitely jump in if you think I'm wrong here, that you came to realize that, hold on a second, these people don't know shit about my culture, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I think growing up without representation in the media can really harm a child. And, you know, I grew up watching Disney Channel and a lot of Hannah Montana and Wizards of Waverly Place, Zack and Cody. So, like, there wasn't much representation for my culture I can't even think of anything of anybody that was in the media growing up that was Palestinian or just Arab in general. I'm sure there was, but I didn't know anyone. But I feel like now is really like the time, like, the world is turning and there's a lot more representation in the world for everybody, and for Middle Eastern people like myself. So I feel like it's a good time to be growing up, in terms of like knowing your identity and not shying away from being yourself and being unique in a way.
What I love about what you said is, like, I've known people in my life who have done the typical thing of, like, you know, like, expound out loud, like, oh, why does representation matter? And, you know,
yeah,
and why is it happening in, like, movies and TV shows and stuff? And so some of those people might, you know, point and say that, like, it's kind of, you know, extreme and overdone. But I always find myself kind of shocked when these kind of comments come up, because I always find myself thinking that if you're the type of person who has, like, an adverse reaction to representation, then you should almost ask yourself why.
Yeah, it's so necessary. I do think, like, when it's overdone and the film or the TV show does it just to do it, it doesn't come off as genuine, and I'm all about authenticity and just things that feel honest and genuine. So when it comes across ingenuine, you just feel it. The viewer feels it, and I think that's a big reason. Obviously not everyone's reason for maybe not agreeing with too much representation, but I think that would be a reason for me not to agree with, like, overly doing it. It's because, like, you want it to be authentic at the end of the day.
In reference to representation, I feel like the way this all ties back to your music is quite significant. Where when I delved into your music for the first time, I felt like I was being presented with an artist that made all the sense in the world in regards to the people in your life. Like, if I was to imagine, like, you know, the pre-start of your career, there's probably people in your life who are, like, not surprised to see you being where you are right now. Like, you know, friends and teachers and stuff like that. Like, people who are kind of, like, looking at you and thinking to themselves, like, yep, it makes all the sense in the world that she's doing this right now. Has that been the case for you? Like, have the people in your life kind of reacted in that way?
I think so. Ever since I was a kid, I would take every opportunity that was thrown my way to perform and to show people that I do this, that I sing, and I like it, and I want to be a singer when I grow up, you know? So I think everybody who met me knew. And, you know, as a kid, everyone would say, you know, when you're older and you're famous, get me tickets to your concert or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. Now that it's actually happening, I feel like, yeah, people have been supportive, and I don't really know because they don't tell me, but they might be saying that. They might be going, oh, okay, I knew it all along, or like, oh shit, she's doing it. Like, I don't really know. I don't really talk to people about, I mean, I do talk to people about my career and about music and stuff. I think just people keep a lot of things to themselves, which is cool. I'm fine with.
Yeah, well, you know what? I feel like I have to point out, especially because I feel like it's becoming more rarer as, like, you know, time goes on. I love the fact that back then, leading into now, you innately understood the importance of performance. That if you're going to build this career, if you're going to write these songs, they would have to be experienced within that live context. I mean, honestly, I love that.
Absolutely. And I grew up performing. I used to sing in a choir. And that's where I got a lot of stage experience, a lot of performance experience, and I just loved it. I enjoyed it. I never had stage fright, which was amazing. And I know a lot of people struggle with that. And I was just always confident for some reason. I don't know why. I really don't know why, but it's always been this way. And I'm really thankful because it's definitely the career path I've always wanted. I think ever since I was 12, I think I told my mom that I wanted to become a famous singer when I was older, you know?
Well, you know what, like this has never hit home to me, but it's fascinating when you consider you starting in that way with choir. Cause I'm curious in regards to that. I mean, we're getting in the weeds a bit, but if you consider that as like a launching point, right? I imagine it would have been like a big moment for you when you decided to, you know, go out solo, like decide to do it on your own without having like, you know, this choir of like numerous other musicians around you. Because a lot of the, if you consider like what that is, it's kind of like you saying that I'm going to be at the focus, I'm going to be at the center stage. Because if you think about it, like with the functionality of a choir, you are like in a group. And to go from that type of safety net to like, you know, like to have the focus be solely on you. I'd imagine that would be like a really big leap internally, right?
So when I first started singing in the choir, I was like 11. And I didn't have many solos back then. And I don't remember the first time I ever got a solo. But I do remember, like, slowly starting to get more and more and more solos. And at one point, I kind of, like, became, quote-unquote, the star of the choir. So I liked it. I just always liked it. And I think I, like, I knew when to quiet down, like, the star aspect of things. So like whenever I was singing in unison with the choir or like in harmony with the choir, I wouldn't try to overpower because I knew that wasn't my role there. But I loved it when I had a solo. I would just like stand, like I would walk up and just sing my heart out and perform and really, really enjoy it. So I knew how to separate both parts because they were both important parts of being in a choir. Different like roles, you know what I mean? And it was like it is different, but at the same time I got used to it growing up. It was all like kind of jumbled up together, so it wasn't that big of a change. But when I was 16, I did like my first big like big concert. It was at a Christmas market and the stage was really big. It was kind of like a festival-y type stage, really big. And it was just me. I performed 3 covers. I was sick that day. I really didn't want to sing. Like, I remember getting there and I was like, why? Why am I doing this? I don't really want to. But then I got on stage. I think it was during the actual performance and not the sound check. I got on stage and something came over me and I was like, wow, this is even more fun doing it completely by myself, you know? So I guess something really clicked that day, and that's when, like, I reaffirmed my desire to be in this industry, or, you know, to be doing this myself. So, yeah, I think that's the turning point.
Like, you know, how crazy is life that that's become, like, a significant, like, experience and fixture of your life and what you're doing now, you know? But if you consider how you told me that just now about like how you weren't feeling well that day and, you know, and had all this stuff going on, like when you're in the thick of it, if you had to put yourself back in that headspace of that day leading up to the performance, you know, like you probably had no like, you know, metric in your mind or like headspace to consider that this was going to be like a significant experience whatsoever, you know, like you probably didn't go into it thinking this was going to be noteworthy in any way. Like, I almost imagine you being in that scenario thinking to yourself, like, let me get through this and just, like, never think about this again. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, I remember not wanting to do it, but then I'm so thankful that I actually did do it. I remember my mom telling me that my dad was sitting down. They were sitting, like, in a restaurant. I guess they didn't know I was going on to perform. I don't really remember what happened, but I remember my mom told me that my dad was sitting and at the restaurant, and he said he didn't know it was me singing. He was like, this is Lana singing? Like, what? So I remember, like, him even being surprised. And it's just a turning point for everyone, I think. Like, even my parents saw that I am good on stage and I like it. And I wasn't scared for a single second. It was just very surreal. And I remember it to this day. Not in full detail because my memory sucks, but pretty well for what I can do.
Jesus. Well, I'm glad you brought a family because we're going to be talking about that quite a bit. You know, something I wanted to bring up, and it's very important for me to bring up because I really do love the fact that you sing in Arabic. And I think it highlights, I think this is innate when people will take it in, you know, like the language. I feel like you do this very well with your music where it highlights what a beautiful language it is. And I wonder, what would you say is your favorite thing about Erba?
Okay, this is not what you're expecting.
Probably not, but let's go then, okay?
The curse words? Yeah.
Is it because I don't know a lot about Arabic, but I know a little bit. Is it because you can't really say it in a singular way? Like, you know, like in contrast to like English and a lot of European languages, is it the fact that like because of the way the language is, you kind of have to be a bit more descriptive in your insults? Is that what it is?
What I like about it is that you don't curse the person in front of you. You curse their entire family.
Okay, and I absolutely didn't know that. Thank you.
Yeah. It's great. If you're angry, it's a good language to get your anger out. Like, it's very, very good. I use it when I'm driving. I haven't driven in years now, but when I used to drive. And just to, like, let out aggression, it's really good. That is definitely my favorite thing about the Arabic language.
Well, Lana, I hate to be basic and predictable, but I'll be real. You kind of put yourself in this position. So I got to. So what would you say is your favorite Arabic swear word or phrase?
Wow, there's so many to choose from.
You absolutely have to, Lana. You really do.
I guess. Oh, this is so bad. See, when you translate it to English, it sounds so much worse. Okay, the one I use the most goes like kus uchtak, which means, no, but you gotta say like kus uchtak, you know? Like you have to actually mean it when you say it, but basically it means your sister's pussy.
Oh my
God. Yeah. But it's great when you're angry, you know? And like, I live in England, so nobody really understands it.
That doesn't even sound that bad.
It's great, you know.
Oh, part of me is thinking of my times in Europe where like where I've been like around Arabic people and like I've, you know, overheard some phrases, and now I'm kind of thinking to myself like, oh, wait a minute, like have I heard that in passing? Maybe I have.
You might have. You probably have. It's very popular.
Thank you for schooling me on that in like multiple fronts. Truly, I massively appreciate it.
Very, very welcome.
You know, something that's interesting about this series of the podcast, and I think it's a byproduct of the way, you know, the world is right now, is that, funnily enough, TikTok has come up quite a bit. Honestly, like more times than I probably expected it to. And I never had a chance to ask an artist this yet. Like, what is it like to actually have a song go viral? So, I mean, it's one thing to be heard by loads of people, Lana, but you know, tell us, like, what does it actually feel like when it's happening in real time? Because honestly, I don't think many people can imagine those feelings.
No, it's crazy. It's surreal, actually. I had gone viral in the past prior to, like, going viral for The Snake and Sold. When I first started going viral, that was even crazier because it was a new sensation and I didn't understand it. And it ended up being more toxic than positive because you look at your phone and you get that dopamine rush every time a notification comes in. You know, like whenever you get a message on Instagram or whatever, or a notification that somebody commented on your photo, you get a dopamine rush. Like, I think that's what these apps are designed to do. So imagine getting a notification every single second about somebody like commenting on your video or following you, and it's crazy. And every time you refresh your page, you just see the numbers going up and up and up and up and up. And in the beginning, I started defining myself through those numbers, like using those numbers. And it was so toxic because at the end of it, if I didn't get to a certain amount, a certain number, I would feel bad about myself because like, oh, that was like my highest, so why am I not reaching that at least, if not more? So it was bad in the beginning, and then I kind of took a break from TikTok because of it. I took a break for like a year, and my account was just like dead silence. My videos would not do well, so I was like, okay, what am I gonna do? Like, maybe TikTok isn't for me. And then I got back into it after a lot of self-work and healing end of last year. And I just started posting and posting and posting until I had my first viral video of 2022. And that was the one with my mom reacting to the snake. And I was ready. With that one, I was really ready. And I still had that dopamine rush that you get every time you see the numbers go up. But at one point, I think I turned off all notifications except comments. And the reason for that was because I wanted to like respond to people, because I just want to say thank you to everybody saying really kind words. So I had the comments coming in, but it wasn't giving me every single notification. It was giving me a lot, but not as much. Because I guess the app changed. And I was just very grateful. And that's when it kind of changed my life. And I basically got an audience from that. And it felt amazing because I knew what I was doing. And I was going viral. Like, I was ready, you know? Preparation. I was prepared, and preparation really makes the difference.
Yeah, and you know what's really striking about that? And I think this is, like, where age is significant, you know? And something I rarely like to bring up, because I know at times it might be diminishing. But I have to say, I have so much respect for you as a young person, having gone through what you went through initially, and to go back into the fold of it and proactively approaching it in a different way, because I mean, that would be very important for me to highlight in everything that you just, you know, said there. Because that dopamine, like, even if you have an awareness of what it is, of like, you know, how toxic and draining it could be, there's still that addictive quality. Like, at some point you have to like inwardly go, I am not going to allow this to happen. And the fact that you're able to do that, you know, whether or not it was like hard or easy, like to actually be able to do it, it's a wild thing. Like, not a lot of people allow themselves that self-awareness, especially people who are, you know, older.
Yeah, it's really hard to take a step back and to get away from things that give you momentary pleasures. But I'm learning to be a long-term pleasures kind of girl rather than a short-term pleasures kind of girl. And, you know, I've been going to the gym every day. Well, not every day, 4 times a week. I've been trying to build healthy habits. So I think building healthy habits with social media is not a bad thing to try to do. And I'm not going to say I have the healthiest habits. I don't scroll as much as other people might, but, you know, I wake up in the morning, I look at my phone first thing, which is bad. I still have work to do, but at the end of the day, it does pay off not to like give in to those pleasures, those toxic pleasures. I have a video going viral right now. I think it's on 1.5 million at the moment, which is great. And I'm really happy. I'm not checking my phone anymore. I don't know if it's not giving me as much dopamine as it did before. Maybe it isn't, because I kind of got used to it. I guess as humans, we get used to things. And then you need something like bigger to like give you the dopamine rush. But I'm not checking my phone as much, which is great. I'm very happy that it's going viral. I check it every few hours just to like maybe reply to a few comments, but I'm not making it a big deal, because at the end of the day, this is like only a piece of my journey and not like the end goal. So it's all about reflection and realizing what's good and what serves you and what doesn't serve you, you know?
No, super well put. And you know, what really surprises me about how you're approaching your craft is, you know, I think it's impressive that you've been able to keep this momentum going, because that's another thing about going viral, like that people don't discuss enough. It's like one thing to have that moment and to watch it grow, but then it's like, what are you going to do with it? How does that manifest and how does that get carried on? Like, how are you going to build upon it, essentially? For example, I thought it was really cool when I was prepping for this interview and I saw that your YouTube page has these clips with various versions of your song. And it's all playful, but it like feels very authentic and artistic at the same time. And does it ever surprise you that they're able to be that way with your music, like to essentially not be that precious about it?
I think being too precious with your music can be damaging at times. Of course, it depends what kind of artist you are, like, and your personality as a human. So I like humor. I'm not gonna say I'm the funniest person in the world, but I do like making content and making content that has some humor in it. And it's just like what comes to me naturally. So making a ton of versions of my songs, first of all, it doesn't harm the actual song. It actually brings more streams or views to the actual song and more awareness to the actual song, which is like I think great in terms of marketing. But it's also giving more to the fans. It's giving them an extra version. So like if you're sick of the original song but you still kind of want to listen to it, maybe you could go listen to the slowed down version. Like why not have it on there? And we live in a world of content, you know, like right now content is king. So why not try somehow without cheapening it to make your music kind of like a form of content, because it is. So I don't know. I just try to find creative ways to keep it entertaining for me and for my fans. And I don't know. I kind of go with the flow. And that's what came out with The Snake and with Sold. I think Sold had less versions because I was like, is it too much? Is it not? I don't know. But I kind of just go with my gut and and post, make and post whatever I feel like posting.
Yeah, like I'd really love to start asking you about your songs, starting with The Snake particularly, because I think what stood out to me innately is was the way that your vocal carries the song. It felt very unique and it ties back to your heritage in some ways to me. I wonder, what was it like for you to bring that song to life? Because, you know, I imagine in some ways that this song was like a new experience for you in terms of creating it.
Yeah, definitely. It was the first proper song that had Arabic in it that I'd made. It wasn't, I never thought it was gonna go as big as it did. I'm very happy it went as big as it did. I wrote it like last summer, I think. Yeah, last summer with my producer, Ben Thompson. We had just fought, I think. And we were sitting in the studio and I had the idea for the snake already before being in the session, and the vibes were just not there in the studio. There was something in the air. I guess it was raw emotion, and it just happened. He started playing guitar. He's a guitarist. He's amazing. So he started playing these really pretty chords, and I already had the first few lines of the song because I was trying to make a demo. As I said, I wanted the song to be called The Snake, and I was trying to make a demo so he could produce it. But I didn't really like the demo that I'd made. I didn't really like the chords and the melodies that I had chosen. So he just started playing something, and I took those lyrics and I was like, okay. Like I just started singing them over what he was playing, and the first part just came out with that riff that a lot of people like on the skull in the beginning, and it kind of just happened. And then I think we wrote the beat part, the rappy part that comes in at the beat drop that day. But then we wrote like the pre-chorus way later. I was at my parents visiting and I was just playing the chords on the keys on the piano, and that just came out. So that song happened over a few months, but we only worked on it like a few times, a handful of times actually. And it just happened without much trouble. And whenever I started showing it to people later, I started noticing different reactions, and I was like, oh, okay, there's something there. People are reacting differently. But still in my head, I was like, okay, this is cool. This is different. This is not the single. Because I always kind of like wanted to be like other people because it's scary taking a chance, and I never realized that actually taking a chance and being different is going to make me more successful than trying to be like someone else or do something that already exists. So the snake kind of really proved to me that like, oh, I should do my thing. I should do my own thing and create something new. So that's kind of what the song stands for right now for me.
I love that journey because I think you isolating that there, you know, like expounding the fact that there was times in which you wanted to be other people. I think it's significant in the context of music that like when you think about it, there's not many fields in the world where your entryway is viewing other people and feeling a sense of like, I want to be like them. Like even if you were like aspiring to be like, you know, a race car driver or like, you know, an astronaut or something. Like, it's really specific if you think about seeing a musician on stage or seeing a musician in a music video and having a sense of like, I want to be like that in terms of like their vibe, not necessarily them as a person. And I think what doesn't get discussed is that, you know, having that as your entryway in some ways can initially lead you to diminishing yourself, even like unintentionally. And, you know, it's kind of wild. You see that with a lot of musicians. I think it's wild that you caught on to that pretty early. And I think like what makes it very powerful to me is the fact that essentially you have to like kind of come back to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what my project is about. So I like working with projects because it gives me purpose. So I'm working on a project called The Holy Land, which is where I'm from. And it's not like religious or anything. It's just about my home. And it could be anything, you know, your Holy Land could be your safe space. You know, I want it to be a relatable thing that a lot of people can just like relate to. So the snake is the entryway into the Holy Land. And it's about when you lose your innocence and you let bad into your world knowingly. And all the other songs are kind of like part of that. And it's a journey to self-discovery, which ends at finding yourself back in your roots, which is what happened to me. So yeah, I just kind of want to tell that story. And I'm really excited to see how the whole project unfolds because it's a work in progress right now. But it's so exciting.
You know, this just popped in my head when you said the name. And obviously, you know, also the explanation at the top there. My mind immediately went to, like, you know, calling a project that is pretty punk rock. Because there's people who might have a reaction to that without considering the overall context. And to me, there's a bravery in you naming something like that. And knowing that, you know, for the audience or, like, around a bystander, they have to do work on themselves to just, like, accept what that name entails in reference to it being deeper than face value. There really is something fucking punk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes for my writing in Arabic as well. So when I write in Arabic, I write in my dialect, which I personally haven't really heard before in any music that exists out there. But that was like, that was my condition sort of for writing in Arabic because I never actually wanted to do it. But then when I did it, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it my way, which is kind of my personality. I don't like being forced into anything. I'll try something new, but I would want to do it my way. So in terms of like the Holy Land, it's like, yeah, okay, some people might not really like it because they see it and they take offense straight away. And I don't mean to offend anyone in any way ever. But at the same time, like art, I'm not criticizing, but art does criticize, and art should, you should take risks when making art, in my opinion. So yeah, that applies to the Holy Land and for my Arabic writing.
You know, I vastly agree with you, and I think, I hate buzzwords, but I do feel like it's very applicable to you. I mean, this word I'm about to use, which I've used before, but authenticity. It's something that I love about the songs that you've released so far. They're so clearly tied to your own personal story that if someone was to have the desire to criticize beyond a technical element, like if someone was being, you know, not mean-spirited, but like operating in bad faith in some way, it would be to me like, how do you negate someone's actual experiences? You know what I mean? Like the two don't equate. Like you can't criticize something that someone's actually lived. At least I don't think so.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think the recipe for authenticity is your own experiences and taking some elements of your environment and putting that into your art, because that really makes room for you to be authentic. And it's easy to be authentic when it comes from a raw place. So yeah, it's coming from a raw place on my end. So I hope people like it.
No, yeah, I think they definitely will. And you know, I next wanted to ask you about Sold, because I feel like there's a distinct way you're singing here, especially within the arrangements, where that's expanded upon as the song progresses. And I love the fact that this is bilingual, especially the way that throughout the song you're showing the dualities and the complexities between Arabic and English. And it kind of has this interesting way of like a bit of like a cross-pollination existing.
Yeah.
You know, but respectfully, I think a big strength of the song is the fact that, you know, you really don't need to know Arabic to enjoy the song. I mean, I don't know Arabic, and I fucking love this song, you know what I mean? And to be honest, I do tend to feel that way about music that comes from different cultures where I don't really, you know the language. I want to ask you two things in this regard. One, is that something you would even agree with about, you know, not needing to know Arabic to enjoy it? And two, how has it felt for you to have people outside of your culture appreciating this piece of art that you've made?
Yeah, I think you don't need to know Arabic to enjoy my music in general. But I'm not one to talk because I do understand it, so I don't really know what it sounds like to somebody who doesn't. But yeah, a lot of people have told me that, so I guess I believe it to be true. What'd you ask me next? I forgot.
Like, particularly, how does it feel seeing non-Arabic people, or people who don't really have any, you know, interfacing or relation to Arabic culture? How does it feel seeing that these people are reacting to the song?
One step closer to world domination. That's how it No, I love it. I love it. I want my art to just be very big, and I have very big goals, and I want everyone to, like, well, of course not everyone, because you can't really get everyone to listen to one person, but, like, I want as many people to listen to my art as possible. I want to tour stadiums later on in my career. I just have really big goals, and having to have people listen to my music, even though it's in a different language and they don't understand it and they still enjoy it and comment about it, send me messages about it, it's amazing. And I didn't think I could ever do that, but I am. So I'm proud of myself, you know, and I'm so excited to see where I can take this, and like both artistically and in terms of bringing representation, which I felt was lacking growing up. So it's amazing, and I feel like the world's like my oyster.
I mean, honestly, Lana, I love when people allow themselves to be proud of themselves, because, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like that's something that's a lot rarer than it should be. So, you know, hand on heart. I love everything you just said there.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, you do work on yourself, you know, so why not be proud of yourself? Like, it makes sense.
No? Like, seriously, big ups to you for saying that about yourself, because it's important, and, you know, I think it's needed.
I think if you're proud of yourself, everybody else is eventually gonna feel the energy and be proud of you too. So just be proud of yourself and own your shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, come on, like, especially if no one else is going to.
It is.
In reference to Sold, what's the story behind the lyrics? Because I would imagine that they'd be quite significant in a way.
So Sold is the second part of the Holy Land. So going back to the Holy Land is divided into six phases, and they're phases to like finding yourself in your roots. That was my conclusion to self-discovery, we can call it. So Sold is phase two, and that comes after the snake, which is phase one. And Sold's about giving into that temptation of falling into like negativity, bad cycles, bad decisions, just like self-sabotage in a way. And it kind of like answers to the snake, where the snake represents the bad that like comes into your life. So this is you accepting it, and like, you know, I say I had a taste and I'm sold. So I had a taste of comfort, and you know, comfort can be bad for you if you're too comfortable, you know, if you stay in your comfort zone for too long. That could really like sabotage your life, because you're not going to end up making the right decisions for yourself. So that's what Sold represents.
I mean, how striking is that? I feel like that's an area where, like, that people really wouldn't consider. You know, by the way, this should be coming out around, I want to say, the top of November. I don't know when the first phase of the project is coming out, but if you just wanted to like have that in mind there.
Yeah, no worries. Then maybe I'll talk about the next phase, phase three. But the next song is kind of like, it's about when you start looking in the mirror and you don't see yourself staring back at you. You see your clones. You see, oh, it's called, by the way. You see different versions of yourself that don't represent you fully, because you're losing yourself. So that's when you start to lose yourself. You know, you go into the climax. It's a whole storyline. But yeah, I'm really excited to release the next one. We're working on it at the moment.
You know, like, that's wild to me. Like, how wild is it that, like, the way you said that just now, right? It reminded me of a conversation I had a couple years ago with Phineas, Billie Eilish's brother. And I remember he said something about life. And I remember looking at him and being like, it's like you've lived multiple lifetimes. Like, to even be able to say that. And I felt that way just now listening to you talk, honestly. Like, the way you just described, again, not to talk about age, but it's so wild to me that you're at this point in your life and you're able to think about things in this way that you do. And not just think about, but also being able to convey it in that way also. Like, I think that's a really big thing. Like, I wouldn't even say what you said there was necessarily like an old person's like perspective or view of things, but I do find it very mature that you're able to reflect on it.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm honored to be put in the same category as Phineas. I think just people who are into art and into like creating something with a purpose tend to look for that purpose in other things, and you start self-reflecting a lot more and writing things down, and I guess you observe a lot more than other people might, and that's why it may seem like wise in a way. Or I don't know, maybe it's just being creative. I don't really know what brings that about, but I thank you.
No, yeah, of course, anytime. And you know, funny enough, just, you know, returning for a sec at social media, which I have to say is a sentence I don't think I ever thought would come out of my mouth, but, you know, here we are. Like, would you believe that it was actually because of an Instagram clip that initially made me want to talk to you?
Really? Which one?
It's the clip of you showing your dad sold while you're both sat in the car. Yeah, I'll describe it a bit for people who might not have seen it. So essentially, you're sat in the car together and you're playing him the song. And he realizes that you're singing in Arabic. And you could tell that he's very much having a moment of true shock where, at least what I got from his face was this vibe of like, oh, wait, this could happen? And it's really beautiful. And I know it's pretty much all in the clip, but can you just take a second and describe to me how that moment felt for you? Because honestly, that was really special.
So showing my dad my song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I was like, is he going to like it or not? I don't know, like, I don't know how I came across in the video, but I was just sat there like, okay, like, he's not going to say much. Sorry. He's not going to say much because my dad doesn't, like, speak. He does speak, but he doesn't say much. So I was just sat there, like, awkwardly, like, okay, like, is he going to react? Is this video going to be good? And I remember looking back at the video and I was like, he didn't, like, give me the best reaction, but I'll post it anyway. And it did super well afterwards on TikTok, even better than my mom's video for Sold. But, I mean, you know, the emotion was there. He liked the song. And after that video was over, he asked to listen to it again. And then his friend was passing by, so he called him over. He was like, hey, show it to my friend on camera. Show it to my friend as well. So I posted that video yesterday, and you see my dad there, sitting in the back. He's like, keeps looking at his friend.
I need to go see that one. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's on TikTok now. It's cute. It's cute. But yeah, it definitely was like an awkward video to film. It was more awkward to film it with my dad than it was with my mom, because my mom's just naturally more of a talker and a communicator, and my dad just like sits there. And so I was like, okay, like, let's try. And it was definitely like a special moment though, showing him my music. It's always a special moment showing my parents, my family, my friends even, my music, because it's me pouring my heart out. So, you know, it's nerve-wracking, but at the same time, I love it because I'm proud of my work. If I'm showing you my work, I'm proud of it.
But, you know, like, since you brought up what it was like for you when you turned the camera off with your dad, what was it like when you turned the camera off with your mom? Like, do you remember what those moments were like?
I'm trying to remember, like, a specific moment. I feel like my mom never, like, wants to do it. So I'm always like, please, mom, let me just, like, quickly show you. And put the camera on. She's always like, oh, I don't look good though right now. Why do we have to do it right now? And I'm like, just no, like, it just makes sense to do it right now. I don't look good either. But let's just like let's just do it and I'll show you the song and that's it. You don't have to worry about it again. So it's always like, eh. But my mom like definitely loves the songs. She loves The Snake and she loves Sold as well. And I think she likes the next one. Has she heard it? Yeah. She loved the next one. Sorry, I got confused with another song, but yeah, she loved the next one as well. So with my mom, it's always more rushed. And with my dad, it's always more awkward. But I think they're going to learn to, like, get used to having my phone just over there filming them. Because sometimes they're like, do I sit up straight? What do I do? And I'm just like, be yourself. Like, this is, like, a real moment. I'm just filming it, you know? But yeah, we just drive away after I turn off the video. Like, we look at it and we're like, okay, cool. We did what we could do. And we turn it off and put on some other music. Or she listens to the song again and we drive wherever we were gonna go.
They're really touching videos, and you know, they're really a nice window and to your life. So before we wrap, I wanted to, well, earlier I brought up how I didn't know much about Palestinian culture, and I suspect that's the case for a lot of people who are listening right now. So outside of the context of the food that you brought up, I'd really like to know, what would you love to say is something about your culture that you really love? You know, something that you cherish and feel that is really special about your culture?
I would say our sense of family and how important family is and just relationships in general. So I have a big family on both sides. And I don't know, you get together whenever. You have a lot of people that will have your back, and I just think family is so important, and my culture definitely has that, where like here in London, you're a lot more independent, and obviously there's pros and cons to both things, but I do love the sense of family that you have back home, because it's a support system, and we're human beings, and we love a good support system, you know?
No, yeah, very much well put. And, you know, seriously, thank you for your time, Lana.
Of course.
I'm really, you know, it's an interesting time to be talking to you, like, you know, at the top of everything. I'm really excited to see where you go. Because clearly you're going places, and, you know, not just that, you're going places that you clearly want to be going to. I think that's a very important and lovely distinction there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I'm excited too. We'll see where I end up.
Thank you so much for checking this out. Be sure to subscribe to The New Exchange via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you stream podcasts. Until next time, thank you for listening.